What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the podcast and welcome to the first episode under the new name, the Renegade Movement School Podcast. Now, if you've been following me for a little while, you might be like, cool, Fernandez, why the name change? And the answer is because Renegade Movement School more accurately reflects the reason that I'm doing not only my one-to-one online coaching stuff, but this podcast and all of the other content that I create. And that reason is that when I look around at the way that fitness culture is doing things, I don't see it creating fitter, happier, healthier people. So much of the way that not only I, but many other people, when I started coming into fitness culture, when I started, you know, just joining a gym and wanting to work out, it's because we wanted to be stronger, healthier, more confident versions of ourselves. When I look at the way that fitness culture is breeding so much insecurity, the way that we're encouraging people to eat is leading to so much disordered eating, the way that we're encouraging people to train, that's leading to so much muscle and body dysmorphia. I don't see it working. And what I want this podcast to do is to help people think about the way that we train and the reasons that we train differently so that we might not only create a better future culture for fitness, but also create a better relationship with our own body so that the way we train is not leaving us beat up and fucking injured, but actually helping us build deeper longevity in our body and with less pain and with more movement freedom. What if the way we train didn't just make us more intimately acquainted with all of the tiny little ways in which our body was not big enough or jacked enough or fucking lean enough? What if our training helped us look the way that we want to look without fucking obsessing over every single tiny little detail? And finally, what if our training made us feel more powerful and capable to accomplish the things in the rest of our life that we want to accomplish rather than comparing ourselves to other people constantly? These are the ways in which I want to change the way that we approach not only training, but how training helps us engage with the rest of our life. And that is the genesis behind Renegade Movement School. That is the why behind I'm doing every single thing that I'm doing. And it's the reason that I want to continue to connect with people, experts at the intersection between movement and mindset, so that we can live a fitter, more fulfilled life. We can be more effective in our training. And I also want to tell the stories of people that have used fitness, used movement, used training to build a life on their terms that they feel truly proud of, that they feel truly excited to go and live. So with that being said, it gives me great pleasure to introduce my next guest, Jamie Partridge. Now, this is one of the most under the pump podcasts I've ever recorded. I met Jamie traveling in the Philippines in this little surf island in the east called Siargao. And we instantly connected when we met in this hostel because we were both so deeply entrenched in training and also building a business that allows us to live this location-independent lifestyle that we both really, really value. Jamie is the founder of a company called Uplift Sales. It helps tech companies connect with more sales qualified leads. And a huge reason I wanted to sit down with Jamie is because from the moment we got talking, he told me about how much that fitness and training had played a role in not only his lifestyle, but also his mentality. And he attributes not only his personal success so much to the lessons that he's learned from fitness, but he also had a really deep insight in just how much fitness and the lessons that you learn from fitness and from training helped him in his sales journey and helps him qualify the kind of salespeople that he wants to hire and work with. And so literally an hour and a half before I have to go and get my flight out of the Philippines to Malaysia, we were having this conversation around movement and mindset. And I was like, dude, you have to come on the podcast. Let's do it right now. So we found this yoga shala in the back of one of my friend's villas. And we ended up sitting down and recording this conversation. This was super fun. Jamie is a wealth of knowledge, not only sales, business building, and also lifestyle design, but also the way that fitness and training can inform and can empower all of those different things. So without any further ado, please welcome Jamie Partridge. I'm fucking sweating.
Me too.
Like it's a gross motherfucker.
Oh my goodness. All right. Bro, first of all, fucking under the pub podcast. Last minute before we head off. Dude, I just want to start by, I'd like you to take me back to you moving to Australia.
Mm.
Set the scene a little bit for me.
Okay.
Just before you started your business, because I'm really interested in the kind of origin story of how you started building towards a lifestyle to what you do now.
Mm. Yeah, well, first of all, mate, thanks so much for having me. It's really a pleasure. The time we've spent together has been really, really inspiring for me. So it's a pleasure to be here. So yeah, I'm from England originally. I done the classic sort of university path that a lot of people do in England. I studied law for 5 years, got a master's in law. I moved to London after that and got consumed by the London city lifestyle, maybe going out a bit too much, not really focusing on my goals and aspirations. And I really just needed a change of scenery. And I've heard a lot of great things about Australia. A friend of mine was actually leaving to go, and I think it was on about 3 days' notice. I was like, yeah, okay, I can see myself doing that. So I decided to leave with basically no money in my bank account, just a bit of a dream, really. And we landed in Manly, which was paradise. If you've ever been to England, or if you understand what England's like, especially the weather, it was really paradise for me. And I had a lot of fun. Been there for nearly 5 years now, jumped around. But the biggest difference for me, and I'm sure not everyone experiences this, but I think there's a big difference in the mentality that people have in Australia. In my experience, England's very, it can be quite closed-minded. There's a lot of talks about the risks and the potential problems you'll face if you want to start a business or create a new venture, where in Australia, I think there's a lot more people running their own businesses. There's a lot more people taking control of their own lives. And yeah, it was really, really inspiring for me. So I owe that, the move to Australia, a lot, actually. I'm really glad I done it, yeah. Sorry, I'm absolutely sweating.
We're in this beautiful yoga shala, but there is no power today, and so we're sweating balls. I find it really, it reminds me of this, like when I was about 20, I bought a motorbike. And before then, I'd never really noticed it around. But then as soon as I bought a motorbike, I started to see them absolutely. Man, it's so weird. Everyone's buying motorbikes now, everyone's riding. And but in reality, it's only because I shifted into my mindset of now I'm someone with a motorbike that I started to see them absolutely everywhere. And I think that it's a really similar thing when, for me, when I've moved to different places in the past, I've tried to connect myself with different people who share a similar mindset. It's almost like the motorbike thing again. If you know, it sounds like you were ready to take that leap and take charge of your, you know, maybe step into your own business, stuff like that. And all of a sudden you start to realize and kind of connect with people more that are doing the same thing and sharing the same mindset. So it's almost like that selection bias as well.
So true. I think that's a big point, is a lot of people I was meeting in Australia, if they'd come from home or other places in the world, they had made that big move themselves. So then instantly I could connect with that, because it was scary. It was a big change. I definitely missed home, the comfort of home, a lot. But I think it's turned into quite a common theme for me. I really need to seek discomfort. I really need to get out of my comfort zone. I'm not saying I do it all the time, but I'm aware that I need to do that to be able to grow. It sounds cliche, but you don't grow in your comfort zone. And that was a big, big shift for me, is meeting a lot of people that had had the balls to do it. So that was really inspiring.
I'm keen to dig into your story more about how you eventually started the sales work and started your business, but I just want to linger on that point for a second, because it is a cliche about, oh, I need to get out of my comfort zone, and a lot of people pay lip service to that. But in my life, I know that there was a kind of clear turning point before which I knew I needed to do it, and I started doing it. And I'm wondering if there was a point for you about where you went from knowing that intellectually to being like, okay, I'm actually going to put my money where my mouth is and really start to seek out that discomfort, because it's fucking really uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's really, really uncomfortable. And I think one point I want to make is it always comes back. The fear and of the unknown, of, especially if we're traveling a lot, the you get so comfortable in a place, you have a really solid group of friends, you have good people around you, and then it can be scary to take that next step and to go somewhere where you don't know anyone. But the real catalyst for me was making that leap when I moved to Australia, because it was really difficult, actually. The first few months, maybe even the first couple of years, it was really challenging because I didn't have my friends and family around me. I didn't have the people that I'd grown up with. I didn't have those comforts. But at the end of that, I felt like I grew so much. Mm. I felt like I'd really turned into a better version of myself. I think a lot of it was about building confidence in myself, and it doing that and coming out the other side made me realize that I can do it, you know? And then that leapfrogged into me starting the business, and that was another step. I think the more I can put myself in situations that I find really difficult and get through them, hopefully, yeah. touch wood,
yeah. Yeah.
You come on leaps and bounds and you just keep going, so.
This confidence thing is something I'm really interested in. I will ask you a question about your business in a second, but it's, for me, there's so many different, you know, when I was trying to read more about how to build more confidence and stuff like that, I was like, oh, you think about it like this and change this way of thinking or do these affirmations. But for me, so much of the imposter syndrome that I've felt, so much of the lack of confidence and the insecurity I've felt have been grounded in reality.
Yep.
Sometimes those little voices, and sometimes not, but sometimes those little voices inside, you know, my head, I'll speak for myself, they're speaking about lacks of confidence.
That's
lack
why they're
of,
so dangerous.
Lack of experience. Yep. And these aren't just things that need to be, I don't need to trick myself out of thinking this way. Mm. Sometimes it's just pointing a finger at reality.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the most powerful things, you know, what I'm hearing from what you're saying as well, is it wasn't until you actually put yourself in a situation where you felt like you didn't know what the fuck you were doing.
Yeah.
And only by doing, then you kind of figure it out.
Absolutely.
And then you put yourself back there again. You're just building a body of evidence for yourself purely by going through it that you actually are capable because you've done it and you've gone to the place where, like, I actually have no idea what I'm doing, and then come out the other side. And I think that real life evidence is so much more powerful, so much of a more stable foundation to build a more confidence, more security, more feeling of agency in your life than some kind of affirmation or reading some book or changing some way of thinking.
Yeah, well, I think that ties back nicely to the fitness stuff, which is a big part of my life. Yeah. But I think in general for me, confident, we've spoke about this quite a lot, and I definitely want to touch on the little voices because that's been really impactful on me. But for me, confidence isn't knowing that you can do something. It's knowing that you can try, you can fail, and then you can learn how to do it. And I think that's where people get it wrong. I when I say I'm confident, I don't mean I know how to do it. I'm winging it. Pretty much anything I do, I'm winging it. But I think that's really important to be able to do that. When I say I'm confident to be able to achieve this or do that, what I mean is I know that I can try, I can fail, I will fail 100%, there's no doubt about it, but I know that I can take that information, I can adapt, I can try again and iterate, and then if I fail again, I have more data, I have more information, and I can do it again. And I think the gym for me and sport in general, that teaches you unconsciously, because I think you turn up, you go, wow, when I first started going to the gym, still I've got a hell of a lot to learn. I had absolutely no idea. Yeah. I was so scared. I was so nervous. You think everyone's looking at you. You think that you're the smallest person in the gym and you're embarrassed. But you just keep turning up. You keep doing it. You go through those bro phases that we spoke about where you just want to lift as much as possible.
Yeah.
And then you realize no one cares what you're doing. Like, yeah. It's just about bettering yourself and keep turning up. Same with sport, same with football, rugby, anything you do, you start and you're absolutely rubbish. And that's why I love, we touched on it earlier about the white belt philosophy.
Oh, yeah.
And the mindset book as well.
Yes.
If you get comfortable being rubbish at something at the start, and you understand that you just keep going and you keep iterating, then I personally believe that you can pretty much do anything you put your mind to. So that's the key thing for me about confidence, is confidence in my mind is framed about I am confident that I can figure it out eventually. I'm not saying that I know how to do this thing. And I think that was a massive turning point in my life. When people speak about confidence before, I thought that they had all the answers, they figured it out. Mm. And I've seen already a common theme with a few of the people you've interviewed and a lot of the people I look up to. We're all just figuring it out. No one has the answers. We're all just going and learning and adapting. And so that was a big changing point in my life.
I love that redefinition of confidence, man. Mm. Because I know for me in the past, that confidence has felt like something that I thought I needed but didn't have.
Yes.
And it was like a prerequisite for action.
Yeah.
And I was like, exactly. Oh, I would act, but I'm just not confident.
Exactly.
I would act, but I'm just not, I just don't know how yet. But I love that redefinition of like, oh no, like the confidence is like, just you can just go and just figure it out. And that, that of course also takes experience. But the fact that the way that you get it is just to fucking try and fuck it up, I think is really refreshing. And I'm also curious as well, kind of starting to move into how you started this business. One, do you feel like that mindset around the confidence of starting was something that you still had back then when going to start the business you had? I'm interested for you to tell the story of how that kind of came to be.
No, I'd be lying if I said. I'd be lying. It'd be great for me to sit here and say, oh no, I knew I could do it. I knew that I could fail and learn. No, it wasn't like that at all. I actually got let go from my company. I was working as a sales manager in Sydney, really good job. And I actually got let go. It was around the time of COVID. Hmm. I felt like I was doing a great job. I understand why I was let go at the time. Hmm. And I realized that I could just go back into the rat race. I could apply for a new job. But for me, being at the mercy of someone else was something I really couldn't deal with. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like I was doing a great job. I felt like I was adding a lot of value to the company and to the owner. But for situations out of our control, he had to let me go. And I understand that. But from that point on, I was like, whether it goes really well or whether it goes really poorly, I need to be in control of my own destiny and own life. And from that point, I decided to start the business. I knew that there was a lot of value that I could offer. I knew that I could help a lot of people, open a lot of doors, book some good meetings, close some big deals for people. And I've always had a real passion for business and giving it a go. And I owe a lot of that to the people I've grown up with. Callum, quick shout out to Callum. He's ever since we were at uni together, we've always been playing around with different ideas and giving it a go. And I've never had any doubt in him. Mm. And that's reflected on me because I think we've really fed off each other there. And he's now doing amazing things. And I'm looking forward to us doing amazing things together in the future.
Sick, dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're a big part of the genesis of this podcast as well was kind of speaking about the lifestyle that that your own business brings, especially one that's kind of location independent. And I know for me, man, when I first read the fucking 4-hour work week back in whatever 2016, it blew my mind that something like that was even possible. And I think a big reason I wanted to speak to you as well is to not only unpack how you achieved that, but also really present it in its raw light, so to speak. Like to really just to kind of speak about your experience, not only building that and kind of realizing that dream, but also that what it's been like for you as well.
Yeah.
So how early did the location independent, traveling with your own business feature come into it when you started?
Uplift sales. Yeah. So yeah, just to preface, we're recording this in Siargao,
yes.
Philippines,
yes.
Which is pretty cool. It's always been my goal to have a business that is fully remote. So all our employees are fully remote. I think that's really important for me. I think that traditionally, especially in England, it's been 9 to 5. You have to be in the office. You have to all be in the same place to be able to get work done. And in my opinion, if you need to have someone in the office for 8 hours a day and keep an eye on them for them to do work, you've hired very poorly and you need to look at yourself. A lot of people that are like that, but in my experience, the people that I work with, I trust them. And you have a great quote from Gary Vaynerchuk is, hire fast, fire fast. Mm. I believe that you need to trust people in the beginning and then they need to keep that trust and develop that trust. So for me, it was always my ambition to have a fully remote working company. I had the benefit of, we had a few clients in London when I worked for the sales agency in London that were fully remote. And the people, my clients there were really getting some amazing stuff done. And it was like they're taking meetings from this place in the world and this place in the world whilst I was stuck in the office. And something really didn't sit right with me there, because I had evidence that people can get the work done and they don't need to be stuck at a desk. And I think realistically, listen, even if someone's stuck at a desk from 9 to 5, they're not working from 9 to 5.
For sure.
We've all been there. Even the people, higher management, they understand.
Yeah.
It doesn't take, unless you're incredibly overworked and you're going to burn out soon, you sprint and then you rest and then you sprint again. A great analogy I heard was you should, especially in sales, but in anything, you should work like a lion and not a cow. And a lion sprints for their kill, they rest, they recover, they take stock, and then they go again. And I think that's really important. So right from the beginning, I knew that I wanted the company to be fully remote. And that also ties into a really important thing for me is the location independence, the location freedom. I think what a lot of people do is they try and put the money before the freedom, or they try and put the cart before the horse, and they try and earn as much money as possibly as possible quickly so they can have freedom down the line. Whereas I've been blessed by evaluating a lot of content, seeing a lot of people talk about how, no, you need to start with freedom. You need to start with your location independence. And then obviously everyone, I'm sure everyone has aspirations of making a lot of money. Then you grow and then you try and earn the money. So that was the outset from the very beginning. And I've been really passionate about that, actually. And I think that, in my opinion, especially salespeople, I don't feel like they need to be stuck in an office. I feel like we have an incredible team. We close some really big deals. We have some really big clients on our books, like Google Cloud, Rapid7, Cisco, and we're fully remote. Really importantly, I think you need to be very transparent with your clients and also your team members. I don't think it works if you are fully remote and people are allowed to go to the gym, take their dogs for a walk, pick up the kids, and you're trying to portray to your clients that you're all together working solidly for that 8 hours a day. So that's on the owner or the director, whoever's setting up those deals. It's one of our biggest selling points is that, listen, I've worked as an SDR, a cold caller, which is what our business is. I've been stuck at a desk for 8 hours a day. I've got to make 150 calls. I can only go out for a break when the clock hits 10:15. And there's a lot of people still stuck in that position. And what we do is, I always tell my clients whenever I'm pitching for a new client, I say, listen, everyone that works for me will always have the same freedom that me and you have. So the person I'm speaking to is often the owner or the sales director, marketing manager. If they need to go and pick up their kids, or if they need to de-stress and take a walk, they can do it. And I don't think that it's fair to make the people underneath you work in any different way.
Yeah.
I think that it's also very, very difficult to hire for that, because you need to, it's a very different skill set to hire someone that you can keep an eye on and be in an office for 8 hours a day, and they might have some good output. But identifying people that will work when you're not looking is really huge. And I take the, I'm not a micromanager. I hate micromanaging. I think it's not worth my time. It's not worth anyone that works for me's time to manage people below them. I believe that I hire someone and I trust them to do the work. If they do the work, then great, and we're all good. And obviously I'm there to help them. But as soon as it's taking up my resources and time to be like, okay, are you online? What's going on? Are you working on? That's when we need to end the relationship. Because it's, for me, business, obviously it's about making money, but it's lifestyle first for me. I don't want to cause any unnecessary stress for me that might potentially feed into the business, cause difficult situations and overwork people. So the best way I can protect the energy of my employees is by protecting my energy first.
I really like that kind of opening that little window into inside of your hiring process. And something else that you said really jumped out to me as well, because I think there's a lot of glamorification, if that's a word, for around the whole entrepreneur, have your own business, work remotely.
Mm.
But in some senses, there is a smaller sample size of people that can do that.
Mm.
Whereas someone who just knows how to sell or is willing to learn how to sell or willing to learn how to do a job that can work for, you know, in kind of an organization like yours,
yeah,
and still experience some of that location freedom and kind of more independence around their time, I think it's still a really attractive option. If, because man, like fucking fair enough, you don't want to run a business, man. It's a lot of extra stress, it's a lot of extra responsibility. So I like that that's also moving forward an option for people as well. But now go.
Yeah, I think I just want to touch on that. I think that I'm sure there is a lot of other people out there, but the traditional model of a business is make as much money as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And I do truly believe the people that work for me are quite fortunate, because we are potentially not optimized to make as much profit as we possibly can, because I value my lifestyle more than that.
Yeah.
I obviously want to make a lot of money, and I'm confident we will. We're doing really well.
Yeah.
But if I've got to work 100 hours a week to do that, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
And therefore, the people that work for me, they also experience the same. Like, we pay them very generously. There's a lot of money there to be earned, but I'm not on top of them 8 hours a day being like, let's get this done, let's really push it. So I think the way the world is going, a lot more owners and entrepreneurs are becoming like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can find someone to work for that has that mentality, you should really take advantage for it.
Yeah.
Take advantage of it, in my opinion, because especially in sales, I think that you can definitely get the job done remotely.
Mm.
Like, as long as you have a good place to work, as long as you have a solid place to take professional calls and get the job done, there's no reason you have to be stuck in a desk. And it's interesting because actually, when I speak to new prospects about signing up clients, and I say, "Oh, I'm in the Philippines or I'm in Indonesia," very often they're like, "Wow, that's like that's pretty incredible." Like I believe that actually gives off an air of confidence. Like we say, confidence that we really know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Like we don't have to have a team crammed in an office for 8 hours a day to get this job done. This is what we do day in, day out. We can get it done, and we can be in beautiful places, meeting cool people at the same time. It sounds pretty inspiring when I say it.
We're inspiring ourselves up here. And you're right, man. This is like, it's for me, it's always been such an attractive prospect. And I'd love to kind of like, if you'd like open up a little window of insight even further. I think one of the biggest things for me that generated fear and insecurity when I started, or before I started my business, when I was thinking about it, but like, how do I start?
Yes.
And, you know, like, if you take yourself back there as well, you were saying you had no fucking idea what you were doing as well.
Yeah.
So it might be a bit of a general question, but how did you start? And maybe what were some of the biggest and most, you know, earliest challenges that you had when going out on your own for the first time and having to learn all of the skills of the business that you develop now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm quite fortunate in the sense where I believe sales is, in my opinion, very easy to just jump in and do. Let me reframe that. When I was always working for these companies and I was making sales, I always felt like I could do this for multiple companies at the same time. I felt like I was getting the job done so efficiently that I could definitely be helping other companies at the same time. Obviously, you can't do that, non-competes, etc., conflict of interest. So I always had that impression in my mind that it was possible. And when I started the business, it was actually it came more from a personal place of, I can't be the destiny of someone else, rather than I really want to start a business. You know, it was a case of, I can't do this anymore. I can't deliver really great results, do a great job, and then still be let go and not be able to pay my bills. I honestly felt like I had no choice but to take it into my own hands. And to be very granular, to talk to you about it, basically what happened was I got set up for a referral for another sales job. So I was a sales manager. And when I was speaking to the company, they wanted to offer me a sales role. So they wanted to give me the job. And I thought that it was the perfect opportunity for them to be my first client rather than me be working for them. So I was transparent with them and I said, listen, I'll take the job, but I'm going to set it up through my own company. So be essentially a freelancer, but you will be my first client. The actual deal was horrendous. Like, the amount that they were paying was shocking. They know that. They know who they are as well. Listen, I don't hate the player, I hate the game. I understand that. But it was always my goal for them to be my first client and leapfrog from that. So what I'd done was I signed them as a client, had some really awesome results from them, got a testimonial from them, explained how we had helped them, in what industry they were in. They were in like the project management space, selling technology. And then created a website, awful website, awful. I'd done it all myself. It was very time consuming, difficult.
Yeah.
We put the logo on the website, pretty much the only content we had. We had a little bit about the case study, had a little bit of information about what we'd done. Created a LinkedIn company page, launched it on LinkedIn. I'm starting this company, which was scary because I knew that I would make it work, but I was still very conscious of what everyone would think. And I still battle that now. I've got a lot better with it, but I still battle that now. I was nervous to put it out there because if I put it out there and I don't follow through with this, I'm going to lose real credibility. Yeah. So what I then done was I started actually reaching out to people. So we are a cold calling agency, a sales agency. So I would leverage, I'd say, I know exactly who I want to work for. We want to work for sales directors, marketing directors of technology companies that need to close more sales. And I reached out to them with email, calling, LinkedIn, saying, listen, I'm Jamie, founder of Uplift Sales. We've recently worked with a sales director over at X to help them generate more meetings, close more deals. I really think we can help you too. Are you free to jump on a call just so I can give you some more information and take it? 99% of people not interested, obviously, that's the game. But then you uncover someone and you're saying, okay, actually, we've got a bit of budget. We've just let an SDR go. We really need leads coming in. Let's have a conversation. And I remember the first big sales call I had. They were a really nice company, perfect fit, perfect target market. We went through the pitch. They really liked what I was saying. And they said to me, okay, can you please send through some general terms so we can review? And I didn't know what general terms were. In England, we say, I don't know, contract, or we may use different terminology. And me being the excited new puppy of the business world, I emailed them back saying, we don't really have any general terms, but like if there's anything you need, we can get back to you. And shock, horror, we never heard back from them again. That was a really big contract. That would have been huge.
Ouch.
And yeah, that was pretty poor form. But that, again, feeds back into the fact of I will never do that again.
Yep.
For sure. If I get a request for some information, trust me, I'm finding it out. Yep. I'm finding out what they need and I'm getting that to them. And it happened a few other times after that. And I got the job done. Hmm. So the after that one, I was setting up a few sales calls, keep going through the same process. I signed up a couple of clients and I was just doing it myself for a good year and a half, servicing quite a few clients, making really, really good money, because I was essentially taking the salary, a full-time salary, for like three or four different clients and doing it myself. But it was not sustainable at all. Like, it was, there was no way I could keep this up. And I was very, so to go back to your point about the biggest challenge was I had no idea how much to charge people. I had no clue, because I had just been taking a salary. I had no idea how much these companies were making from me. I now know, and I know it was a lot, but that was the biggest challenge for me, because the first deal I had was rubbish. The second deal I had was pretty rubbish. But my first step was, okay, I need to earn enough money to live. That was the first goal. No other goal, just earn enough money where I can live, I can get the job done, and then we can figure it out afterwards. We can, because before in my job, I was earning really good money. I had a certain lifestyle, I was living, so we needed to get back to that point. And then when we got there, the next goal was, okay, how much do I need to charge a client in order to have someone else do the job? Me be able to focus on other areas of the business, selling, getting more clients, me just have enough money to survive again. So for me, the buffer still to this day is, can we earn enough money to have profit coming into the business? I can pay staff, we can advertise, we can market, and do I have enough money to survive? So the biggest challenge was knowing how much to charge. And then what happened was, I remember it so clearly. It was really, really amazing. And it still fuels me to this day. I hired someone. They were doing the work. I was not working. So I had a day off. I think I was on the golf course once, classic, with my friend, Ollie. Shout out Ollie, because we started a similar business around the same time.
Right.
And I was on the golf course, I wasn't working, and I had clients emailing me saying, thanks so much, we're really happy with how everything's going. And in my mind, I was like, I'm not working, I'm not doing anything. And that was a real trigger for me, of the clients that you sign up, they want the result. They don't mind if you have teams completing it. They want the best service possible. And I was very stuck in the mind frame for a while of, I can just earn a lot more money. So now we could earn a hell of a lot more money if I just done lots of the work. But for me, that isn't a long-term play. That's not where I get to where I want to be. And I see so many people get stuck in that race of earning a lot of money, but they don't have the freedom. They can't undertake projects that they really enjoy or have interest in. So I was really, really conscious about that. And then from there, it snowballed. I'd make sure, my background is in account management mainly. So I was managing the accounts and making sure everyone was happy, training the callers, hiring them, coaching them, etc. And then I was also doing the sales outreach for the company as well. So then the next step was, sign new clients, onboard them, make sure we have enough money to pay two members of staff, make sure we can pay our accountants, all of our licenses, registrations, etc., to be able to operate the business, and also have enough money for me to survive as well. And I'm very fortunate in the fact that I'm not really too materialistic. I value my freedom more than I do material goods. So I only ever need enough to survive, live comfortably, don't get me wrong. If I want to have a coffee now and again, I will. So for me, it's always been feeding into the business. Yeah. One more point before I stop rambling is, I had a real battle between the profit and growth paradox that I see, especially working in the tech industry. I see it all the time. We had it a year ago. I'm sure there's more coming. tech companies laying off thousands of staff, thousands of sales staff, thousands of marketing staff. I see it all the time with these brand new pieces of software, with investors, where they value growth over everything else. They're losing stupid amounts of money. If you could see the balance sheets of some of these tech companies, they are losing billions of dollars every year, but they're trying to grow as quickly as possible to hopefully make profit in the future. So I'm very, very conservative with that. I do not need to grow exponentially. I do not care about how many employees we have. I don't, these vanity metrics of I have a business with 50 employees. If that's going to be unsustainable and not a long-term plan, I'm not interested. So we're very conservative about only growing at the rate we can manage, making sure all our current clients are really happy, because obviously it's much easier to retain a client and expand that account than it is to sign a new client. So that's another mistake I think I see people making, is grow at all costs, is have as many employees as possible. And trust me, making payroll is incredibly stressful with people not paying invoices on time, different payment terms, but your staff need to be paid every 2 weeks. So for me, it's about managing my energy, making sure the growth is sustainable there for the long term, and not getting too full of myself and ahead of myself, you know?
Yeah.
That's a big one,
because
it's like, you could grow really aggressively, but if it all goes to shit, pardon my French, you're going to be really stressed out, and you're going to have to let a lot of people go. So it's also been a really good for me on a personal level, having employees that rely on me, because I feel like in my past and maybe even now, I've been quite very willing to take risks and willing to just take a big leap into something. But now, no, you can't. I can't mess with the livelihood of the employees that I have, and that's held me really accountable, which is nice. Sorry, I went on.
Dude, don't apologize at all, man. There's so much in there I really want to unpack. But first, my man Joe behind the camera, bro. Can we get a time check?
It's 1:18.
1:18. Okay, beautiful, man. Thank you. Yeah, man. There was so much in there. I just want to kind of recap, because I think as well for people listening, there were so many different points in there, man, that I think will really help people maybe get a picture of how it is possible to build something under their own steam. I think the first thing that you said that really jumped out to me was like, you know, just beginning by doing something for dirt cheap or for free and then getting a testimonial and then starting. For me, I've like, it makes a lot of sense now, but I would love to just know that's a framework.
Yeah.
Start whatever skill you can offer, do it for dirt cheap, or do it and just get a testimonial, get a win in the book, some result that you can show to somebody else, and then get started. The second thing that you were saying was around being able to develop that skill of when you don't know exactly, someone's going to ask you, it's going to happen a billion times, someone's going to ask you something and you're going to be like, and then to have the resourcefulness and also the knowledge to be like, this is not one of those times where I'm just going to roll over and play dead.
Yes.
It's going to be like, I need to go out and learn how to get the answer I need for the problem I have in front of me.
Mm.
And then now I have that little information. That's another brick in the wall. Mm. And I'm going to build on top of that, dude.
I just want to quickly touch on that. So yeah, that's really interesting, because I'm very much, and I owe a lot of this to my previous boss, Scott, actually. He had a great mentality on this. He said, he was very open about, listen, we're not going to get everything right all the time. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to mess up. That's fine. Just own it. Be open and say, don't be afraid to say when you don't know something.
Yes.
And on the same token, you shouldn't use that advice all the time. You need to know when to use it, which areas of business or of your relationships you should use that in. And yeah, that was one of the areas that I messed up. So I should have then gone away, done my research, found out what they needed.
Mm-hmm.
Another, so I'm releasing a course soon on mastering the art of cold calling for technology companies. And one of the modules in there, one of the points in there is actually about composure and keeping your composure. And that was a moment where I lost my composure. I'd seen the dollar signs. I'd seen the headline of, oh my God, Jamie's got his own business. He's got a client that can support him. I can go wherever I want in the world. I got too excited. I jumped the gun. and then messed up the whole opportunity. So now it's take stock, really evaluate your options, think on things for a day, sleep on it. It's a great, a little, I love that. I thought it was cliche at the beginning, but it's so true. If you have a big decision, sleep on it. And then go back and be, do the best you can. So yeah, that was a big learning point.
Unfortunately, I wish I didn't have to get this flight, man. We could talk for so much longer about this, man. But
yeah, we'll probably never see each other again. Yeah. So we should probably get it all out of the way now.
All the, your whole life on the line. You mentioned something before we started recording I found really interesting about an article that you wrote around how fitness and training impacts the way that you're able to sell. And I know that you train salespeople, you spend a lot of time training salespeople, both in the hard practical skills and also the soft skills. And I'm really interested, obviously, from my background in training and this intersection between movement and training and also the mindset and the way you feel about yourself and how you're able to then go and live your life because of this little, you know, arena in which you go and develop yourself physically and in other ways as well.
Yeah.
What's your perspective as someone who trains salespeople? How does training impact your ability to sell?
I think it's absolutely huge for me. Personally and in my work, in my career, if I didn't train, if I didn't go to the gym or play football or partake in sports, I guarantee I would not be where I am. There's no way. I think there's a few different aspects, but the main thing for me is it teaches you that a lot of the time when you turn up and you show up and you do the work, you're not going to see the results. Mm. It's the delayed gratification. It's the putting in the hard work now and realizing that you're not going to see the rewards of that work for a long time. The gym is a big one for that. It takes a very long time to see any results, especially when you train the way I was for a very long time. It was just ridiculous. Again, come back to it, but I always will. It's really important who you're around. I had a few close friends at uni that were big rugby boys, and they'd take the little scrawny kid to the gym with them, and they'd show me how to do it. They'd show me how to do the exercises. They'd talk to me about nutrition, about food. And it really, I owe nearly all of the self-confidence I have to the gym. And I'm not going to shy away from the fact that starts from an aesthetic place.
Yes.
That starts from you want to look good for the women. You want to be big so you're respected by the other men. Yeah. But it's turned into so much more than that for me. It's really turned into every time I go, I know that I'm working on myself. Yeah. And that reinforces the confidence in me. That reinforces the fact that I'm taking care of myself. I'm valuing myself. And that bleeds out into everything I do. So one of the biggest things I look for when I'm hiring and training SDRs is if they have a sporting background or if they are regularly moving or if they're regularly putting themselves under some sort of physical stress. Because I know, so for example, I hired one guy who was a professional Muay Thai fighter. And to be honest, he was a great conversationalist. As soon as he said that to me, I was like, okay, let's go, let's give it a go. Because there is no better understanding of the sales landscape than physically getting punched and kicked in the face many, many times.
That's hilarious.
And still going, and still training, and still going. I think the training aspect of the gym or movement or anything is where it really comes into it, because for me, I know that it really taught me to keep showing up, to keep putting in the work, to understand that the rewards will come later on.
Yeah.
So sales is perfect for that, because you have to do a lot of outreach, you have to receive a lot of knockbacks, send a lot of emails, make a lot of calls, and you might not have any success at all. But the best salespeople understand that if you just keep doing it, if you just keep showing up, if you just keep calling, if you just keep emailing people, sending LinkedIn messages, you have, like, the way I view it, which is true, you can't not fail. Yeah. Like, you can't not find someone that has, that, as long as you're selling a half decent product service, someone will have this problem.
Yeah.
Someone will be open to speaking to you. So it's really just about putting that out there.
All the soft skills of like delayed gratification,
yeah,
of trusting in the process and also building trust in yourself as well, that,
yeah,
if you just continue to stay in the arena that you will develop.
Mm.
And also, I think a massive one as well is, it's like exactly what you were saying before, like the ability to just continue showing up at something. And you know, because in the beginning, you don't know what you don't know. When you start anything,
exactly,
when you start a business,
exactly,
when you start learning a new,
that's
skill,
it,
when you start in the gym, you don't know what you don't know. And you spend a lot, for me, I spent so much time, literally for me, 9 years, being incredibly ineffective and being, yep, very committed.
Yes.
And getting nowhere.
Yes.
But I was trying so hard, I was running all these different directions, but I wasn't getting anywhere, but it was still because I didn't know what I didn't,
yep,
know. And I had to get to a point where all of that effort was also directed in the right way,
mm,
that so that could turn into competence. And I think that's a very big part of learning complex skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think that is absolutely huge.
And I think the another point is, further down in my training career and sales career, it really taught me about efficiency.
Mm.
And I think there's a big correlation between the two, mm, where in the gym, I was very often training every day. And you realize, like, training hard every day, like, mm, not trying to give yourself any rest. And in sales, I also started my sales career like that. I was going crazy. I was making loads of phone calls. And it's really scary how much overlap there is for me, because obviously completely overtrained, making zero results, burnt out, felt like shit.
Yep.
Sales, hated the job, wanted,
yeah,
to get out,
yeah,
couldn't stand it anymore. And then as you progress as an athlete or training casually, you realize, no, you need to rest. You need to recover.
Yep.
You don't grow, you don't build muscle in the gym.
Yep.
You don't progress in anything. You build muscle or develop stamina or anything when you're resting from the work that you've done.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same in sales. You have to put, you have to have the output, but you can't burn out. You have to think of fitness, you have to think of sales as a long-term play. You have to put in the work like a lion, like we say, you have, mm-hmm, to sprint. You then have to rest and recover, do your research, find your prospects, find your accounts, and then go again. So that taught me a lot of being efficient with my time, with my energy.
Mm.
Energy is something I really want to touch on. I'm very, very conscious about protecting my own energy.
Mm.
Whether that's personal, whether that's business. I used to spend a lot of time around people that would drain my energy. And now I'm very committed to just separating myself from that. I think us three, Jordan behind the camera, we had a great conversation about how we can all be in the same environment, but it's not draining. It's actually fueling for me.
Yes.
Where it's, you're comfortable in your own skin. You're not seeking validation from anywhere else. You're just being, you're being present. And that's what really gets me fired up. So I need to be really conscious about that. That bleeds into who we take on as clients.
Mm.
At the start, I used to see the dollar sign. I used to take on as many clients as we possibly could. But then I realized that if you have a client and you have clients that are ourselves again, pardon my French, but you have to.
This is all getting bleeped out.
This is
safe for work.
Perfect.
Podcast. Mums and bubs.
Yeah. Then it takes up too much of your energy. They might be paying you, but it causes stress for the workers. It causes stress for you. It is not worth your time.
Yeah.
You really need to find those clients that have a great product service. They understand how the world works. As long as we get the job done effectively, they're happy. So yeah, it all feeds into each other. And the reason I love training and I love the correlation between the two, because when it's physical, there's no denying it.
Yeah.
If you run out of your energy physically,
yeah,
you're gone. There's, yeah, nothing that you physically feel fatigued, you feel overtrained, you feel miserable. So when you're training, if you're training for anything, you're managing your energy is super, super important. So
yeah,
There, I could talk for hours about the link between physical training, exercise, and sales, but I think it's incredibly important. I think one of the first pieces of advice I'd give to someone if they want to get into sales or they want to improve their sales career is get in the gym or start exercising, start running. If you're not doing anything physical, start being physical. And the biggest testament, and a lot of, we mentioned it earlier, you said you had a friend that worked in tech sales, it was very successful. Yeah. And I said, I can guarantee you he trains.
Yeah.
And he does. And there's a reason for that. I think people take it even one step further. They will, if they have a really important sales meeting or a pitch, they will train before. And because you feel incredible, you feel amazing. The I don't know the science behind it, I'd love to, but the endorphins released, the hormones released, you feel like you can conquer anything. You feel confident, you feel composed. It quietens the voices. It quietens the voices of, oh, I shouldn't, I can't do this. You're very relaxed. I think it's, I cannot talk about it enough how much it impacts my life. I slip, and again, I hate people that sit on podcasts or interviews saying they've got everything figured out. I don't. It's an absolute battle all the time.
Yeah.
But at least I'm aware of it. If I slip and I have a few weeks off the gym or exercising or playing sport, I can feel myself slipping. Yeah. Final point on that is competition. I'm incredibly competitive with myself and with others. And sport teaches you that. If it's training, if it's going, playing football, playing rugby, tennis, boxing, fighting is a big one too. It teaches you to be very competitive. And what it teaches you is, even if you're directly competing with someone else, tennis is a great example, your biggest competitor is yourself. You have to be very, very composed and dialed in with yourself. And that completely relates to sales. You can't control what a prospect is going to say to you. You can't control a deal falling through at the last minute, even though you've done everything you can. You can only control the way that you react to it. And that's another great, I can't remember who said it, maybe you or someone, but we're here surfing, and a great analogy, you can't control the waves, but you can control how you react to them. Yeah. And that, again, translates into sales. If you realize that it's all on you, I'm really big on Jocko Willink, extreme ownership. If you have real agency and you take control of everything that happens to you, you very often not feel helpless. I'm not saying you'll feel great all the time, it's very difficult, but that gives you a real sense of control to be able to learn from your mistakes, iterate next time, and move forward. So yeah, the crossover is huge. Yeah. And that was a great thing about starting the business, is having the freedom to talk about that stuff, because it felt like traditionally it would be strange to talk about strength training and sales, you know. Yeah. It's almost a bit of a strange overlap. But for me, and a lot of salespeople, recruitment, anyone that works in that industry, they'll know how important that is.
Oh man, if I didn't have to get on this flight, I'll ask 40,000 more questions, but I'm going to need to wrap this up, bro. For people that have really enjoyed hearing you talk about not only the way you think about sales, but also building the business and the lifestyle that you have, I know you've got some really interesting stuff coming out. You've got this course coming out as well. Where can people go to find out more about what you've got going on?
Yeah, so we have our business Uplift Sales, upliftsales.com.au. I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, sharing content on LinkedIn, which is just Jamie Partridge. Or you can find me through the Uplift Sales LinkedIn or website. And yeah, we have a course coming out soon, which I'm really excited about. That will be thesalescourse.com. And we'll keep updates on that. Also have Instagram, just Jamie Partridge. Haven't really turned that into the business stuff yet, but I will. You can find me at those avenues.
Bro, this has been fucking awesome, man.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. And final point, you've had a real, real impact on me this last weeks we've been spending together. Really, really inspiring. You've got me fired up. I think the biggest thing for me I really love to be around people that are brave enough to be vulnerable and say, listen, I don't have all the answers. We don't have everything figured out, but we can do it. And yeah, being around people like you has been really incredible. And I know for a fact we'll be seeing a lot of each other.
Yeah, brother. Man, I appreciate the kind words, dude. Thanks for coming on, bro.
Thanks, brother. Oh, I love the little flex. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you cheeky bugger. Yeah. He knows what he's doing, doesn't he?